Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for September 26th, 2012. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. I really do appreciate it. It is great to be back again. Sorry about last week. Thank you for listening to the rebroadcast of Dr. Schubner's interview. I had this cold and it would not go away. And my voice, you did not want to hear it, but I am back. I'm feeling well and you are here on a great day. We're going to be talking about mindfulness. Mindfulness, being more mindful and how that can help you feel better. Now, this isn't any kind of new agey, kind of granola-ish kind of meditation broadcast. Not at all. We're going to talk about the basics of mindfulness, some really, really quick and easy, quick and dirty tips to get you fully present and in the moment and on your way to feeling more relaxed. It's a lot easier than you think, so stick around. I've got some incredible, incredible news in the second half of the podcast. You're going to want to stick around for this because we talk about some very common psychological blind spots that researchers have found. Part of the reason that they happen and ways to make sure that you don't let it affect your decision-making skills. So really talking about the healthy mind. Also, the latest research on how depression affects our ability to really know what we are feeling emotionally, how it blunts our ability to recognize the emotions that we actually have. We'll do the headlines, and heck, we have got ourselves a great, great broadcast. So I'm really happy that you are here today. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. And any questions, comments, anything, please don't hesitate to email me. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. Okay. Now, let me ask you a few questions here. Do you feel overwhelmed? Are you stressed? Does it get tough at times, like it feels all of the joy is totally sucked out of your life? Well, if you've answered yes to any of those questions, then this podcast is for you. Because we're going to be talking today about mindfulness, being in the present moment, both in terms of how powerful that is and how you can incorporate some mindfulness meditation into your life. This is real practical information with some tips that you can start using today to really get a sense of the peace and some of the calming effects that comes from mindfulness. And believe me, being mindful and incorporating that into your days can have a tremendous positive effect on your health, both physically and emotionally. Now, we've talked about this before on The Healthy Mind in terms of staying in the moment, the healing power of being right here, right now, in the now. But what is mindfulness exactly? Let's talk about this a little bit. Well, have you ever been like driving somewhere, right? And you're driving maybe home from work and you make it home and you don't remember a thing about the entire drive. You don't remember getting on the freeway. You don't remember turning on the streets into your neighborhood and then going up your driveway. And a lot of us can relate to that. Most people have gone through that. In today's modern world, our busy lives, we're very, very familiar with multitasking. All of us do that. But because of that, we can lose awareness of the present moment, particularly in this hyper-connected, super multitasking world, as we try to juggle all the demands in our lives, work, home, finances, and a ton of other conflicting demands for our time. We've got to make an effort to be mindful. Why? Because in today's society, those forces will work their best. They'll work against us as they try to keep us away from focusing in the present moment. And that's when we are vulnerable. We fail to notice the good things in our lives and how strong we are. We fail to hear what our body is telling us, especially as I talk about the effect of emotions on pain, but all types of physical ailments. We don't listen to give ourselves a clue of how stressed we are, or we blow it off. And we tend to be so hard on ourselves. We ravage our self-esteem with this unbelievable amount of self-criticism. But that all catches up. Now, first off, we have to realize how easily our minds can be distracted and how often we fall away from the present moment. What do? Well, first off, we tend to examine the past over and over and over in our life while we're also trying to anticipate the future. But both of those things take us away from the present moment. There's a quote that I'm always reminded of when I think about this particular issue. Lamenting about the past or worrying about the future robs this moment of all of its energy. And that's what we tend to do in our lives. And that can cause problems in its extreme. This type of thinking can lead to depression and anxiety. Now, you may be thinking, well, so what? What does present moment or focusing on the present, how is that really going to help me? It may not sound like it can be all that helpful, but learning this, learning how to do it and doing it regularly can lead to profound relief. What we do in mindfulness is that we focus on the present and suspend all judgment of ourselves, all self-criticism, and just be in the moment. You don't think about the past, you don't worry about the future, and you're right here. And that can have an unbelievably positive impact on our lives. Mindfulness is a way of paying attention, right? You pay attention on purpose, or rather with purpose, to the present moment. All we think about is right here, and we don't worry about what is coming into our minds. We always anchor into the moment. Now, you may think, all right, well, this is sounding pretty frou-frou, but let me give you some practical examples. Let me ask you another question. Think about the most beautiful time in your life, whatever it may be, a time that you can really remember as a beautiful, beautiful memory. It might be a holiday, it might be a vacation, a wedding, maybe the birth of one of your children, whatever it may be. No matter what that picture may be, what does it have in common with other times in your life that you said, wow, this was an amazing time? These are all moments when we have permitted ourselves, we've given ourselves permission to be fully in the moment. We've shed away the past, we don't think about it, and we don't worry about the future, and we're right here, right now. Holiday, wedding, birth of a child, whatever it may be that's positive. And what happens? What happens? Those moments of mindfulness are among the most beautiful times in our lives. And it isn't just about those moments, but when we have those moments, the memories of them, they sustain us. They linger, and that positive impact echoes all the time whenever we recall back that memory. So it isn't just about being in the moment for the moment, but this is where we see learning how to do this has that positive impact on our lives and especially in our health. And we can do it. You can do it. Anyone can incorporate mindfulness into their daily routine. You've got to fight that resistance or that tendency to say, I can't meditate. I don't know how to do this. Okay? It's not as hard as you think. But you're probably saying, all right, radio boy. All right, Dr. Z, how do you even begin to do this? And that's what I want to talk about right now. I'm going to give you three tips that I think are useful in understanding how to incorporate mindfulness into your life. And I'm going to call them, forgive me for the pun, but the healthy mindfulness tips, three of them. These aren't complete by any means. All you have to do is Google mindfulness or mindfulness meditation, and there are a host of sites, of guided meditations, whatever it may be, that will help you. But some general tips that for most people can be very, very practical and you can start using today, okay? So number one, practice being in the moment, all right? You've actually got to do this. And it really isn't that hard to do. And once you start getting the hang of it, you're actually going to find out it is rather fun. You don't have to be this yogi master, this monk who has gone into the woods for a couple decades to learn how to be one with himself, okay? We're talking practical tips here. So really, when you have a moment, if you want to kind of practice what it's like, go into a quiet room, sit down, make yourself comfortable, and then simply focus on your breathing. Close your eyes and listen to yourself inhale and exhale. And no matter what thoughts come into your mind, reorient yourself into the present by continuing to focus on breathing in and breathing out. And that's it. That's it. I don't mean to minimize meditation to it being that simple, but once you start to get the hang of that and focus on the breathing, and if you stick with it, you'll find yourself starting to get relaxed. So that's one way of doing it. Now, there have been recent studies, and we've talked about them here on previous podcasts, that have looked at just very simple relaxation with some music that is calming and that you enjoy, taking 10 or 15 minutes, staying in the present moment. It focuses you. But it could be as simple as a walk, a 10-minute walk. If you walk around, look at everything. Try not to think about the problems that are in your life or what you have to do. Anytime you feel yourself drifting away, pull back in and start thinking. Feel your feet hitting the ground. Look around, see the trees, see the sky, hear the sounds that you're hearing as you're in the moment. Anything you can do to lock back into that moment, because right now is where the healing is. And it's only when we start pulling away and start thinking about the past or worrying about the future that everything starts to go awry. So practice being in the moment, number one. Number two is do the very next step, one task at a time. Now, that may seem easy, but all of us have been there. Whenever we start to pull away and look at the bigger picture, the project that I have to do, the paper I have to write, the test I have to take, the podcast I have to record, we can start getting overwhelmed. Can I get it done? Is it going to be done in time? Am I going to fail? Whatever it is, the thoughts take over. And I see this a lot in my therapy sessions. But if you really break it down into its parts, no matter what the project is, no matter how worried we are, or for that matter, how relaxed we are about doing something that may involve a lot of work or seems overwhelming, there's still a very next step to do. Doesn't matter if you're relaxed, doesn't matter if you're panicked. It still is that very next step that we have to take. But that's how we get things done. It's a series of small steps, one right after the other, that eventually gets things done. So really here, in trying to focus back in to the present moment, and you feel yourself drifting away, you feel yourself overwhelmed, let that serve as a cue for you. to focus in and do the very next thing that you have to do. And then the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. The very next step, one task at a time. Very, very powerful for really focusing in on the moment. And the final one, again, we're talking practical tips here. Number three, mindfulness at mealtime. Okay? If there's one time where we can really focus in on really forgetting everything for just a little bit of time, mealtime is the perfect time. And for many of us, it is dinner time. Think about it. When's the last time? Now, be honest. When's the last time you sat down at a kitchen table and had a meal and you really just focused on how good the food was without checking your phone or turning on the TV or working on something or reading instead of just sitting and being? And for many of us, sadly, we never do it, right? Now, here's a great time to do that, to stay in the moment. Eliminate all the distractions that are in front of you and take the time to appreciate the meal. Focus in on it. Focus in on how hungry you are. Focus in on how good the food tastes and how you start to feel full and how you start to feel good that you've taken the time to eat. This in and of itself isn't going to make anxiety and depression go away, but it is a very good first step to take in understanding and practicing mindfulness. It may seem kind of silly at first, but you may find that you start to feel more relaxed just because you're doing less, okay? So again, the three things to think about for mindfulness. Number one, practice. Actually, practice being in the moment. Number two, do the very next step, one task at a time. And number three, practice mindfulness at mealtime. Now, I'm going to continue in future broadcasts and on my website to continue to bring you stories about the power of mindfulness and mindfulness meditation. But if you take some time to research it, or just start to do a few of the things that I talked about, I bet that you'll notice that you feel more relaxed. And it isn't just about your emotional well-being, but your body physically will thank you as well. And that, my friends, is a wonderful first step to take down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, the first piece of news, the headline, I knew it all along, didn't I? Understanding hindsight bias. It's a really, really interesting study that was done here. It turns out hindsight bias is a fairly common psychological blind spot in our decision-making ability. Now, what is this all about? All right, let me set it up. The amazing fourth quarter comeback to win the football game. The friend who may admit to cheating on his marriage. Or the quiet guy in accounting who secretly is stealing funds. Now, these situations may be different, but we hear ourselves saying it over and over. Now, don't lie here. We say it all the time. I knew it all along. But the reality of this is we didn't know it all along. We only feel that we do. And this is what the phenomenon of hindsight bias is. And it's really one of the most widely studied psychological blind spots as it relates to our ability to make decisions. Hindsight bias is pretty common, and it's been documented everywhere. Doesn't matter if it's medical diagnoses, if it's in the financial world, in athletics, and even in politics. Well, a couple of researchers, one from Northwest University and another from University of Minnesota, wanted to take a look at the existing research on this phenomenon, hindsight bias, and explore the various factors that make us so susceptible. They also wanted to identify new ways that we might be able to combat it. So what did they find? Well, first off, they say there's three levels of this hindsight bias. Number one, or level one, is known as memory distortion. And this involves misremembering an earlier opinion or a judgment that we had. And the way that they described that was, quote, I said it would happen. Now, level two involves the principle of inevitability. And this centers on our belief that the event that we knew it all along was inevitable. It had to happen. And finally, level three involves a principle known as foreseeability, or the belief that we personally could have foreseen the event. I knew it would happen. Now, why in the heck does hindsight bias happen in the first place? And what these researchers found was that there were certain factors that will fuel our tendency towards this phenomenon. Research shows that we selectively recall information that we know to be true, and we try to create a narrative that makes sense out of the information that we have. Now, when that narrative is easy to generate, we interpret that to mean that the outcome must have been foreseeable. We could have seen it. And the research suggests that we have to have this closure. We have a need for closure that motivates all of us to see the world as orderly and predictable, and we do whatever we can to promote a positive view of ourselves. Now, why is this a big deal? Well, hindsight bias can get in the way of learning from our experiences. According to the researchers, quote, if you feel like you knew it all along, it means you won't stop to examine why something really happened. It's often hard to convince seasoned decision makers that they might fall prey to hindsight bias. End of quotes. Is this starting to sound like you? Hindsight bias can also really make us overconfident in how certain we are about our judgments. And if you look at the research, it's shown that overconfident business people, entrepreneurs, are more likely to take on risky, poorly informed ventures that fail, and they could get into a lot of trouble financially. So what do we do about this? Well, the researchers suggested that considering some of the opposite ways of thinking might be an effective way to get around the psychological vulnerability or this cognitive fault. When we're encouraged to consider and explain how outcomes that didn't happen could have happened, we counteract our normal inclination to throw out the information that doesn't fit our narrative. So we've got a greater chance of really understanding the entire truth, not just the one that we need to piece together. And as a result, we may be able to reach a better perspective of the chain of events that we understand. Hindsight bias. So now, when someone says, I knew it, I knew that was going to happen, you can take a deep breath, smile, and remember that for all of us, it's probably very likely that we didn't know it all along. Okay, now the next piece of news, the headline, Anger versus Guilt, Why the Depressed Mind Can't Tell the Difference. Now, let's paint a scene here, okay? You've got a big, huge presentation for a huge account, let's say. You're trying to make a sales call, and you manage to sleep in. And not only that, you forget to bring the paperwork for your presentation, but you show up. How do you feel? Now, there's probably going to be a mix of different emotions, right? You might feel angry, you might feel incredibly anxious, and you might feel guilty. Now, your boss or the people who were depending on you might feel pretty angry and frustrated by your carelessness, but they're probably not going to feel very much guilt, right? Okay, well, the ability to identify and distinguish between negative emotions really helps us to address the problem that led to these emotions in the first place. Makes sense. Now, the ability to identify and distinguish between these negative emotions of all types really helps us. It's important because it helps us address the problem that led to those emotions coming forth in the first place. Now, while some people can tell the difference between, say, feeling angry and guilty, others may not be able to separate the two. Now, in a new study from the University of Michigan, researcher Dr. Emre Demirel and his colleagues studied whether clinically depressed people would have any difference in being able to discriminate between different types of negative emotions, like sadness, anger, frustration, guilt, and the like. And they wanted to see if that would be any different than those who didn't have depression, healthy people. Because clinically depressed people, that's part of the whole picture, sadness, anger, fear, or frustration, and that gets in the way of their daily life. Now, according to Dr. Demirel, quote, "It is difficult to improve your life without knowing whether you are sad or angry about some aspect of it. For example, imagine not having a gauge independently indicating the gasoline level of your car. It would be challenging to know when to stop for gas. We wanted to investigate whether people with clinical depression had emotional gauges that were informative and whether they experienced emotions with the same level of specificity and differentiation as healthy people." So what did they do? They recruited about 100 people, a little over 100, between the ages of 18 and 40 to be in the study. Now, half of these folks had clinical depression. The other half, healthy, didn't have any depression. And over the course of about a week, they would record their emotions at random about 50 or so times a day. Now, to report their emotions, they marked the degree to which they felt 7 different negative emotions, and these included sadness, anxiety, anger, frustration, shame, disgust, and guilt. And they also had them report 4 positive symptoms, feeling happy, excited, alert, and active. And they had them rate that on a scale of 1 to 4. And what they looked at was the individual's ability to give multiple emotions and similar rankings of those emotions at a given point in time. According to them, the more 2 emotions were reported together, the less a person was able to differentiate between these emotions. So what did they find? Well, the researchers found clinically depressed people, those with depression, had less differentiated negative emotions than those that were healthy. They did not find, though, the same difference between groups for positive emotions. Very interesting. Both people with and without diagnosed depression were equally able to differentiate between the positive emotions. But it wasn't the case for the negative emotions. Researchers thought it might be because people who are clinically depressed differentiate more between positive emotions as a coping mechanism. Now, why is this research important? Well, it might be that the procedures that were used in this study to record emotions may be helpful in studying the emotional experience of clinically depressed people. And it might pave the way towards different types of treatment, especially as it has to do with therapy. According to the researchers, quote, "Our results suggest that being specific about your negative emotions might be good for you. It might be best to avoid thinking that you are feeling generally bad or unpleasant. Be specific. Is it anger, shame, guilt, or other emotion? This can help you circumvent it and improve your life." End of quotes. Very, very interesting. The problems with not differentiating our emotions, particularly when we're feeling depressed, being aware of it, and taking the active steps to really focus on the specific emotions, it may, in the end, be very, very helpful in improving our mood. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Exercise does a body and a mind good. We've heard it over and over. I've talked about it here on The Healthy Mind. Exercise is good for you. And it isn't just for our physical health. I've talked about how exercise can really help improve our mental health. But what really explains the association between exercise and mental health? Well, a new study explores whether certain psychosocial factors, the fact that we're around other people, may help to explain the benefits of daily physical activity as it relates to our mental health. The next headline, primate study adds to evidence of BPA harming human reproduction. And we've talked about this on The Healthy Mind before, the plastics additive BPA. It does appear that there are some health concerns about this. Well, a Washington State University researcher has found new evidence that the plastics additive BPA can disrupt women's reproductive systems, causing chromosome damage, miscarriages, and birth defects. Geneticist Dr. Patricia Hunt reports seeing reproductive abnormalities in monkeys with BPA levels similar to those of humans. Very, very worrisome, and we'll continue to follow that here on The Healthy Mind. And finally, well, since it's that time of year, the headline, Media Coverage Influences Value of Presidential Debates for Viewers. The presidential debates offer viewers a lot of substance about the issues of the campaign, but post-debate media coverage can undermine the value they have for voters, a new study suggests. So, as we've got the debates coming up, and everyone's going to be watching, be careful how much you watch about the post-debate wrap-up and all the talking heads. It turns out it may do more harm than it does good. Oh dear, I don't think CNN will like that study. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can follow me on Twitter as well. Please don't hesitate. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, criticisms, let me know. I want to hear from you. You can email me with any question at peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.